How's it going, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the SITREP, where we are your number one source for veterans benefits information. And today we are talking about, we're having a follow-up conversation about nutrition and bariatric surgery. We got a lot of emails from you out in the field with regard to this topic, and so we are asking back Dr. Ann Smith, thank you for being here.
Good morning.
And Megan McCarthy, thank you both for being here today talking about this very, very important topic. And so if I am a veteran who's gone through this process, how important is nutrition, or how much of a role does nutrition play in my recovery?
Good morning, Paul. Thanks so much for having us back. I'm really excited that our dietitian with the bariatric program, Megan, could be joining us. These are things that Megan and I talk to our patients about all the time, so I'll let Megan start.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here and talk more about the nutrition during this process. And it's one of the most critical components of the bariatric surgery process. Nutrition's really important for preserving your muscle mass after surgery. It's important in the healing process, and then also really important for just successful overall weight loss. So we spend a good amount of time before surgery working with our patients during pre-op education visits. So we want to make sure that they fully understand what they need to do nutritionally after surgery, so before we move them along in the process. So really important.
And so what are some of the things that you're discussing, and is it just the veteran that's a part of this, or is the whole entire family or friends? What is that dynamic?
Yeah, so some of the things we talk about in the pre-op nutrition education is about the importance of protein. Protein's really critical for the healing process and preserving the muscle mass. We talk about portion sizes and making sure that people understand they will need to eat smaller amounts of food after surgery. We talk about the different diet stages that they will progress through, and we talk about different eating behaviors that they'll need to change. And yeah, you bring up a great point about family and friends. We do have some veterans that have their family join in on the sessions because it really involves the support of the whole family to make sure that they're successful. So they are welcome to join in if they choose to. And we do encourage that because, again, like I said, it's really important to have your whole family and your friends on board with this major change.
And so with being post-op and recovering from surgery, I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, how vital is nutrition in healing, getting better? And I mean, we're also talking about a process that someone's going through in order to try and, you know, take hold of their weight loss, right? Or the process of getting through that. So how critical is it with just losing weight in itself, but also recovering from the surgery?
So after surgery, nutrition is the most important factor. We can affect your body's hormones to decrease your sense of hunger and improve your own ability to feel your body's feedback cues about when you're full. But what you eat and what you drink and the timing of that really is going to drive your final result. So Megan spends a lot of time teaching patients about our post-operative bariatric diet phases. Maybe she could explain that.
Yeah, definitely. So we go through 5 diet stages with the patients after surgery, and I can give you a little bit of an overview of what each one entails. The first diet stage is stage 1, which we call, and it's in the hospital. So it's really making sure that veterans can tolerate small sips of water. So staying hydrated, which is another critical component after surgery. And once they demonstrate that they can, you know, stay hydrated with the small sips of water, they move on to stage 2, which is our clear liquid stage. So during the clear liquid phase, they are drinking water, they can have decaffeinated tea, they can have chicken or beef broth, things like that. And the reason why we keep them on clears is to allow the healing process to continue, and again, to make sure that they can stay hydrated.
And one of the tricks that we use while they're inpatient is that quantity is a constant question for patients. So we help them understand the quantity by giving them little medicine cups, and they take one medicine cup every 15 minutes of either the clear liquid that they're drinking, or when they progress to the stage 3 diet, including the protein shakes.
Okay.
Yep. So the protein shakes, we trial them in the pre-op phase, and they are a great source of protein. So like I said, protein is really important for preserving muscle mass. So they will spend about 3 weeks or so mostly drinking their protein supplements. They can also have some of the clear liquids that they had on stage two. And again, this just allows their new stomach to heal properly and to make sure that they have enough protein. So other things that they can have on stage three, most veterans will have like a Greek yogurt, or they'll have cottage cheese. They may have the brats. That's a really common one. They'll continue on with the brats. So again, that stage three is really just focusing on getting in enough protein while they're on, you know, kind of a low calorie diet after surgery.
And so when we're talking about, you know, enough protein, is there kind of like a mathematical balance with regard to the current weight or the ideal weight and how much protein someone's mm-hmm. consuming?
Yeah, so we have a range of protein that's recommended for bariatric patients, and it's around 60 to 80 grams. So after surgery, it can be hard to take in a high volume of food because mm-hmm. your stomach is a lot smaller.
Right.
And you're, like Dr. Smith mentioned, your hormones are a little bit altered, so you're not feeling the same hunger cues that you were before surgery. So we give them a range of 60 to 80 grams, and they can meet that through the protein supplement and then just other sources of options, high quality protein.
Prior to surgery, talking about which protein supplement they want to use is one of the fun aspects that I think can engage other family members also. Because if you're drinking the same protein supplement for 3 weeks straight after surgery, like that is really boring.
It is super boring.
So talking about ways that they can make their own protein shakes, different flavors that they can try, different brands, where you can get them affordably, all of that is a fun way to engage with your family, make them a part of the process, and drive some enthusiasm for the diet afterwards.
Okay. No, I remember did a lot of weightlifting and stuff in my younger years. And yeah, there were a lot of nutritional aspects of things that I was like, God, this is so boring, but I have to do it, you know?
Yeah.
So I did a lot of research on YouTube. I'm like, okay, how can I make this fun to eat or exciting for the, you know, flavonoids, whatever you call them in your mouth. So that's phases 1, 2, and 3. Mm-hmm. What are we looking at for 4 and 5?
Yeah. So 4 and 5 gets a little bit more fun for the veteran because whenever I meet with them after stage three, they're telling me, you know, I really miss food. I really want to kind of go back to starting to eat a little bit more normal. So stage 4 and stage 5 are driving them towards introducing more foods, getting more variety into their diets, and transitioning them to eating a little bit more volume so they can kind of feel a little bit more, you know, kind of normal, I guess you could say. So stage 4 is more of a puree, and they will puree their food, whether in a blender, or some people like to buy baby food because it's just a little bit easier to get it already made. So they might do baby food, fruit or vegetables or meats. And then they'll spend about 3 weeks or so pureeing, and they'll slowly get to introduce new foods, new flavors, new textures back into their diet. And then they'll move on to more of a soft food diet. So nothing with the crunch just yet, but the soft foods, again, people are excited because they can bring back fruits and vegetables that don't have to be pureed. They can start to eat meats without being pureed. So it gets to be a little bit more inclusive of other foods, which is great.
And this is also a good phase to start thinking about the time that they take to eat. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we talk about to patients before surgery is practice sitting down for a meal and taking 20 to 30 minutes to eat so that you can experience the food cues that you're supposed to feel and can be hard to sense if you are eating really fast, like in the middle of your shift, for example. So once you get to stage 4 diet, you're eating enough that it makes sense to sit down, set a timer, make sure that you're enjoying the process of eating over time.
So there's two things from when you describe the phase. I mean, one for me that stood out, because I'm a big coffee drinker, you said non-caffeinated. So what's the deal with, seems like caffeine is an important part of diet, not only for these five phases, but longevity of going through bariatric surgery. Can you speak about that a little bit?
Yeah, so we have our patients slowly start to wean down on caffeine during the pre-op nutrition sessions. And by the time they have surgery, we want them to have eliminated it. And they can switch to more of a decaf, so decaf coffee or decaf tea. And the reason why we do that is sometimes after surgery, caffeine can be a little irritating to the new stomach as you're healing. And sometimes too, it can be a little dehydrating. So we do have them pull back on their caffeine. But I always tell veterans too, if they really love their caffeine, not to worry, they can have it eventually. You know, they can bring it back in. Usually people will start to bring caffeine back in within the first, you know, 3 months or so after surgery, once they're really healing. Beyond stage five, they can start to bring back their caffeinated beverages.
And so it's the process of going through the phases, I mean, you're starting off with just simple water. Mm-hmm. Eventually you build up to broths, and then you're doing purees, and then finally you get to hard foods. I mean, is it just because you went through the surgery process, or is it really, I mean, the stomach's trying to get used to all these changes and complexities of, hey, yeah, things are being rerouted, and yeah, how does that work?
Yeah, so it's a major change for your anatomy, for your stomach, for your brain, for a lot of parts of your body. And I like to tell patients, kind of think of their stomach as a newborn baby stomach. So it needs to learn how to get used to varying textures again. It needs to learn how to properly digest food. And that's going to take time. So, you know, from stage one to stage five, it's usually around a 3 month period. And then we can slowly start to see, you know, that stomach has healed much better. They can slowly start to involve more foods, and they can increase their portion sizes. So again, the newborn baby, it's stage one, and then it takes some time just to adjust.
And postoperatively, after we operate on your stomach, not only have we made your stomach much smaller, but we've really angered your stomach. It gets stiff, it's not very pliable, and so your capacity is going to increase slowly over time as you heal. And that helps you to accommodate the increased quantity and different types of foods as you get out from surgery.
So I would imagine, I'm making an assumption here, that, you know, you go through surgery, you're starting this new diet and everything else. Every calorie that you intake is vital, right? Mm-hmm. So I would imagine that you're on a low diet. Not a low diet, but a low carb diet rather. What is it that people can expect? I mean, is there a particular real thing that you're going to have to do for the rest of your life? Like, it's never going to change. What kinds of things do you really have to stay away from? Is there a particular diet I should really follow or expect to follow?
Yeah, these are all really great questions. you know, after surgery, like you mentioned, every calorie is going to count. Because one, your stomach is a lot smaller, so you have to be really mindful of the food choices that you pick, because you want to pick foods that are really going to benefit you, that are going to make you feel good, they're going to help make your body really strong, and they're going to help you with that continued weight loss. So foods to kind of limit or, you know, minimize would be those higher fat types of foods, you know, fried foods or baked goods, things like that. High sugar type foods, those are really good to minimize or avoid after surgery. And it's interesting, due to the hormonal changes as well, most veterans will say they actually don't crave those types of foods after surgery. So it makes it a little bit easier to kind of limit or reduce those foods. So I do hear that a lot from veterans. And your other question was about a specific diet mm-hmm. to follow. So you mentioned that. I get a lot of questions about that. And what I like to tell patients or veterans is to make sure you get a variety of foods. It's really important to get, you know, your protein, really high quality protein sources, high quality carbohydrate sources, and a small amount of fat, so you're balanced. So that's really the key. We want to make sure that your nutrition is balanced for life. So I don't usually tell them that they need to be following a specific diet. Just they need to be, you know, balanced overall and picking those high nutrient dense foods.
And by a balanced diet, we mean including all of the three major macros that come in food, including protein, but also carbohydrates and fats. All three are important for your body and contribute to you feeling normal hunger cues. So people can get into trouble when they totally exclude one particular type of food. And sometimes people will be drawn to popular diets that they feel are helpful in terms of eating less because they provide simple rules that are a lot easier to follow. When we say things like, we need you to include fats and carbohydrates and protein, that involves, you know, some work. You got to look at the food labels and, but what you get from that is a body that feels good because you're getting, you know, the sugars that your body needs for quick fuel as well as the protein you need for the building blocks to keep your muscle mass around after surgery. After surgery, you're just in a big caloric debt and you have this great hormonal drive that's helping you feel good during that. Mm-hmm. The patients report increased energy, but your body's going to take that weight loss from everywhere it can. And that includes not just fat, but also muscle mass.
Right.
So part of the point of driving home the importance of protein is to keep you from losing so much muscle mass and try and focus the weight loss on fats.
So I remember from the show that you did with Mike that you had spoken about there are some medications that people will be on post-surgery. I'm kind of curious as to, with regard to diet, like how much of the nutrition that you're getting is going to come from medication, how much of it's going to come from liquid, and how much of it's going to be come from actual consumables?
So most of your nutrition is going to come from the things that you're eating and drinking.
Okay.
We are worried about long-term nutritional deficiencies. It's a known complication, especially of the gastric bypass, but can also happen with a sleeve gastrectomy. So we have people on a multivitamin twice a day and a calcium vitamin D tablet twice a day. People need to know that they need to separate the multivitamin from the calcium with vitamin D, or the iron in the multivitamin will bind to the calcium and then you get neither. So they're on these nutritional supplements, but most of your nutrition is coming from your food. The other vitamin that you really have to take regularly is a vitamin B12 tablet. Especially gastric bypass patients are at risk for vitamin B12 deficiency because we've excluded their distal stomach. That's the part of the stomach that actually makes what helps your body absorb vitamin B12. So really for them to get enough vitamin B12, they have to take a lot more in order to get a normal amount. Vitamin B12 deficiencies develop over years. And so when people stop taking their vitamin B12, it can take a long time before they see the ramification of that. And these nutritional deficiencies can be really hard to diagnose. So we just try to drive home the importance of taking these vitamins.
Yep. So very important for that great explanation. The other piece, like I mentioned earlier, was the protein supplement. So we do have, like I said, on stage three, they will be doing their protein supplement. And ideally, as they progress to stage four, stage five, and beyond, we emphasize, you know, the importance of picking food first. And then if you need to, you can keep your protein supplement as a backup. So if you're running low on protein one day, or if you're on vacation and you're traveling and you just don't have things to bring, it's a good idea to bring your protein supplement, because then you have that choice that's available for you. So keeping the protein supplement in the back pocket is always a good option as well.
Okay. So say I've gone through all this, I'm on my diet and everything else. What is really feasible as far as the amount of weight or percentage of body fat that I can lose? And am I going to plateau? And if so, what do I do?
Yeah.
So regarding expected weight loss, it depends on which operation you're having. If you have the sleeve gastrectomy, we tell people to expect between 8 to 12 body mass index points lost. And if they're having the gastric bypass, we tell them to expect 12 to 15 body mass index points lost. Patients do experience plateaus, and this is something that they often end up talking to Megan about.
Yeah. So the first thing I always tell veterans is to not panic about a weight plateau, because it's a normal part of the process. And I like to tell them that, you know, your body has gone through a massive shift in weight loss. So it's gonna take time for your body to really adjust to your new weight. And sometimes it just needs to take some time to do that. So allowing your body to have this time period where it seems like it's a plateau, but it's really your body adjusting to that new weight. and knowing that that's okay. And I also like to tell them too, you know, maybe this is a good time to do a little mental check-in and see how you're doing with your daily habits. So, you know, for example, are you meeting your protein goals? Are you getting enough hydration? We do have a fluid goal set at 64 ounces per day. So they need to make sure that they're staying really hydrated. Are they tracking their calorie intake? Are they looking at, you know, their physical activity and getting enough physical activity in per day? So those are some things that they can really do a mental check-in and see if they're successful with those on a daily basis. And, you know, if they're not, maybe they find one area where they can spend a little bit of extra time paying attention to it and try to, you know, if they're low on their protein, maybe they start to boost up their protein intake. And if they're hitting all the marks, then I tell them to stay consistent, really trust the process, because your body will break through the plateau. And another great thing to do is to celebrate the non-scale victories. So there are so many benefits besides weight loss that you can get from surgery. You know, maybe you hit a new physical activity goal. Maybe you have more energy to play with your kids or be with your family. Maybe you've lost inches. Sometimes the scale doesn't tell the whole story. You might have lost inches around your hips and your waist, you know, by building some muscle. So
right. It
doesn't always tell that story. So those are good things.
Well, that, Dr. Smith, I also remember from the conversation you have with Mike that there's also, oh my gosh, a whole host of other medical conditions that are, I mean, you had talked about a reduced rate in cancer and mm-hmm. all sorts of other mm-hmm. stuff.
Yeah, so one of the really enjoyable things postoperatively is seeing people come off their medications. And that's another great example of a non-scale victory. But seeing their diabetes resolve, coming down on your insulin if you can't totally come off of it, coming off of high blood pressure medications, getting improved symptoms from your snoring. So many patients tell me that their partner says they're not snoring anymore, and all of a sudden everybody's sleeping better. So you get to enjoy all of these non-scale victories with them. And they also see their body remodel. So even if they're not losing weight, they tell me that they're going down in sizes of pants and shirts. And I have people tell me just jubilantly how great it feels to be down 5 sizes in their shirt. You know, they're just so much more comfortable. So there's a lot of things to focus on and improvements to expect to see that are not just the number on the scale.
Yeah. That's going to be one of the best parts of this.
Oh, I love this job.
It's definitely my favorite.
So, I mean, to expand on this then, I have to imagine that, okay, you know, you're going through this process, you have, you know, your support group around you and everything else, but all of a sudden now you start expanding and socializing and going to family functions, and you've got Christmas and, oh my gosh, Thanksgiving dinner and all this stuff going on. What are some of the strategies that people can utilize to prepare for those things, or maybe prepare the people that are going to be around?
Yeah, so that's very common. And I like to talk to veterans in the pre-op process and to encourage them to speak with their friends and family, you know, almost like a family or friends meeting, and let them know that going forward, things are going to be a little bit different for them after surgery in regards to the way they eat and what they need to do. So having that support system involved and knowing beforehand can really make a difference when the events come up. And some of the other strategies they might use if they go to an event, a lot of people will bring their own dishes to share because they know that, well, this dish is something that I'm comfortable eating. And it also provides an opportunity to maybe introduce a new food to others. So, you know, it gives
them— That's clever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it helps the host too, you know, less food for the host to prep. So Right. That's always a good strategy too.
I think that family celebrations are one of the hardest times because so many people work so hard at them, and then they want their guests to come and eat the food that they spent so much time working on. And that's part of their sense that they did a great job as a host or a hostess. So communicating with people in advance to know what to expect, like, I love your food. Thank you so much for caring about me so much, but I cannot eat that, or I have to really eat a small portion. I just want, you know, to set expectations with these people who love you and work so hard to create these wonderful events for families to get together. You just have to communicate so that people know what to expect from you, and don't feel bad if you're eating small portions, and also so that they don't harass you to eat larger portions.
Yeah, smart. It makes sense. And so on the flip side of this, I mean, we're talking about post-op. What about pre-op? I mean, what are some of the strategies and stuff that people might be able to utilize, or some of the habits that they need to start forming in order to get ready for this process?
Yeah, so there's definitely a lot of great options that they could start doing. One of the big ones is just starting to take a look at their overall lifestyle habits and seeing, you know, maybe there's some areas where they can make some small changes to prepare them for surgery. And one thing I like to have people do is to keep a food log. So keeping a food log, whether it's writing food down, whether it's putting it on an app, whether it's making an Excel spreadsheet, anything like that, whatever works best for the veteran, as long as they're, you know, writing down what they're eating, what they're drinking. Using an app, though, I'd highly recommend, because it's very easy to do. You can just type in your food and it does the work for you. So it will, you know, keep track of your whole day, and then it will let you know what you did for calories, what your protein was, what your carbohydrates were, what your fats were. And not only does it give you that whole big picture, it also helps them to learn, you know, okay, this food has this amount of protein, this food has this amount of carbohydrates, and working on learning how to portion out their foods. And it just gives them that great starting point. And, you know, from there, just making small switches. So maybe they're increasing their fruit and vegetable intake. Maybe they're working on increasing their water intake. Maybe they buy a water bottle so they have a visual to remind them to drink water throughout the day. Or maybe they are increasing their physical activity just a little bit. Maybe they're going for 10-minute walks during the day, whatever works best for them. But yes, there are definitely some great changes they can start to make.
I think learning to keep a food log is one of the most important parts of the preoperative process. Mm-hmm. And I think people are very resistant to that, partly because it takes time and you have to to pause and write something down. So I think using these apps just makes it so much easier, and it's a lot easier than it was even 10 years ago with these apps. They have large libraries of pre-existing foods. So if you're at the grocery store, like a lot of these grocery store brands are already logged into these app libraries. These apps also have barcode scanners on them. So you can just scan the little barcode on the food and it pops in. And it's just such a great tool for learning about the fats, carbs, and protein breakdown of the food that you're eating. That I think that educational component that the app gives you is just priceless.
I also have to imagine that, I mean, I'm correlating this with another podcast I did about quitting smoking, but I also have to imagine that it also helps you realize that there are certain stressors or triggers that are currently like, how come I'm always, because I just had a stressful meeting and my go-to is to, you know, go grab a package of crackers and have that or something just to kind of like settle my mind or something like that. So that's going to be really beneficial, especially because you had mentioned that there's like a whole psychological team aspect thing.
Right.
You know, trying to prepare them for the surgery and post-surgery. So that's going to be really, really helpful.
Yeah, there is another whole psychology arm to the preoperative bariatric process. So as long as our patients are meeting with Megan and her teammates at our different VISN sites, they're also meeting with the psychology teams also at the different VISN sites. And the app gives you that feedback, like you think you're hungry, you go in to log another snack in the app and you're like, oh, I didn't realize I have already consumed this much. Or maybe you're just, you have consumed what you think is an appropriate number of calories, but you feel hungry. You can go and look at the nutrition breakdown of the food and discovered you just haven't had enough carbs today, or you haven't had enough protein. And a small 20-gram snack of carbs might get you right back on track. And, you know, that's only 100 to 160 calories, and you can be really successful with that. Whereas if you resist that urge to eat, you're just setting yourself up to binge later because you're so hungry by then.
So staying on track, I can only imagine, like with anything in life, you know, having a support group, family, friends, it could be your pastor, anybody that you're close with, them being a part of this process is going to be pivotal to your success. So can you kind of expand on that, the role they play?
Yeah, so they play, food is a social event in our society. So everybody who's around you, who's part of your social circle, whether it's your partner or your children or your neighbors or people who are part of your religious group, all of them are probably people that you eat with. You need somebody who's really going to be your key support person after surgery. And that person's going to be with you, you know, right when you come home, helping you to deal with the fact that you just had surgery and you're really sore, mm-hmm. but also making sure that you're staying on track when you're not feeling your hunger cues. And then making sure you're staying on track once your hunger cues come back to normal, holding you accountable when you go to, you know, the neighborhood barbecue. You're going to get benefit from all of that. So really being open with people in the preoperative phase that you're excited about this, that you're going to do this for your health and you need them on board, is key to success. I think that that is one of the drivers of the biggest success after surgery.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And just making sure that everyone in your family understands what you need to do postoperatively, and maybe even coming up with strategies beforehand to that work best for your family, best for your friends, so that it becomes a little bit easier to implement after surgery. And maybe sometimes even practicing some of those strategies, you know, making sure that the person that's going to be your support understands how to use the food app as well. Maybe you are both doing the food app together, so that then if you're struggling after surgery, that person can be there to lift you up and say, hey, you know, I'm tracking your food on your app anyway. You know, this is what you need to do today, even though, you know, maybe you just need that extra help that day, so the person can be there for you.
There are some patients who will have bariatric surgery in tandem with their partner. So many people are married to non-veterans. So their non-veteran's partner is having bariatric surgery maybe in the community, and they stagger it so they can help each other, but then also so that they can go through this process together. That can be really powerful. Or they just use the food log together. That can also be great. But I think practicing saying that you're having bariatric surgery or you had bariatric surgery, so that when you are in new social situations around food and people look at you like you're kind of picking at this stuff, like, why aren't you eating normally?
Yeah.
You can just explain it to them, and then they can understand and be supportive.
Mm-hmm. Makes total sense to me. So we've talked about a lot with regard to nutrition, some pre and post-op with bariatric surgeries. Is there anything really major that we've missed that I didn't ask, or maybe something you really want to convey to the audience right now?
We didn't talk about fad diets.
Fad diets?
Or even maybe we could call them popular diets. Things like the keto diet comes up a lot right now.
Yes. Yeah, so the keto diet. So we did touch upon, you know, there's three major macronutrients. We have our protein, we have our carbohydrates, and we have our fats. So we know that protein is really great for preserving that muscle mass. We know that carbohydrates give us energy. And we know that fats are really important for making hormones and for another source of energy as well. So, like, I want to emphasize that it's really important to have all three every day in a good balance and choosing high quality sources from each one. But the keto diet, so just to give you a little bit of a background, the keto diet is a diet that's designed, you know, the ratio of a higher fat content, a moderate protein, and kind of a really low carbohydrate intake. So what it does and why people are successful on the keto diet is having that high intake of fat makes you feel really full. So then you're eating less overall. So the high fat and then the protein that just makes you, you know, not have as much cravings for food as you normally would. So you're eating less calories, so you lose weight. And with that, you know, it is very restrictive. A lot of people will say that they find they may you know, miss having certain foods that they have to cut out. So because it's so low carbohydrate, they're not having normal carbohydrate sources like rice or bread or pasta, things like that. So it is restrictive on that end. Some people do well, but other people, once they come off of that, they might experience a weight regain. So it's kind of a weight cycle where you lose weight, you regain weight. And for our bariatric patients, you know, sometimes they ask if they should follow a keto diet. And what I like to tell them is there's a few cautionary things to take away before starting a keto diet. And one is that, you know, it is restrictive, like I mentioned. So because we want them to get a variety of the proteins, the fats, and the carbohydrates, if we're taking away a certain food group, then they might miss out on nutrients that they already could be at risk for deficiencies. So we really don't want that to happen to our bariatric patients. And another reason why, you know, keto diet might not be the best for them is because it's really high fat. So it might fill them up. They might not eat their quality protein that they need. So overall, it's not super balanced for the bariatric patients. And, you know, the fad diets are a way to just make it easy to lose weight via restricting calories or, you know, taking out a food group. But overall, it's really not a sustainable way of eating for life. And we want our bariatric patients to really have that sustainable eating pattern.
I guess you can create that yo-yo effect, kind of like you had talked about with Mike.
Yeah, exactly. So what I want people to take away from this is that all of these types of foods are important. Protein is really important. Carbohydrates are really important. Fats are really important. And when you deprive yourself of any of these three groups, or you just don't eat enough of it, your body is going to feel bad or hungry. And people are great at suppressing that for a period of time. It can be days to weeks to years, but eventually your body is going to tell you that you need this type of food. And then unhealthy eating behaviors start. We want you to be healthy, not just 5 years after bariatric surgery. We want you to maintain your success, you know, 20 years out to your entire lifetime. And the key to that is by learning to eat a healthy range of foods, hitting all of these three macros to make your body feel full, strong, and like you have enough energy so that you can function well and feel good.
Now, while you were saying that, I was kind of imagining having a car. It's like you need gas, you need oil, you need coolant.
So true.
And you need each one in a certain measurement. And if you're short on one, it can cause problems with the others.
So, car's not going to go.
No. Well, thank you, ladies, very much for coming on the show and talking about this very, very important topic. And we had referenced Mike's interview with Dr. Aaron Smith. You can check that out. Hashtag the SitRep on YouTube. You'll be able to pull it right up on our playlist. But ladies, thank you so much.